Welcome one and all to the Pride of Detroit podcast, PODcast, for the Lions fans, by the Lions fans, online, in your ears, invading your brain, just wriggling in through those eardrums, going up to your cerebral synapses. I don't remember enough of biology to say where everything is stored. So please don't ask me. It's probably the cerebellum or some other bullshit made up word. I've got requests to swear more now, thanks to the person who was mad at us for swearing. So it's going to get filthy in here. I'm Chris Lemieux, the adequate host at adequate host. I think that handle's changing very soon. I've been teasing that for a while, but we need to change it. I need to go a little more respectable. Jeremy Reisman, the fearless leader, is in the room with us here in Radio Free POD West, but he is tagged to his keyboard because he's got more important things to do. He's got to, you know, cover. Look at him. He's got to cover the training camp news. He's got to watch Twitter. He's got to talk about Greg Robinson. He's got no time for our silly little podcast games.
Why hasn't Stafford signed yet?
He's very mad because Stafford hasn't signed an extension, and he has about like 30 articles in the chamber, and if he doesn't get to use one, he's going to point one at himself. So the fearless leader is breaking down, but that's all right, because who do I have along for the ride? I have Ryan Matthews. Back is the motherfucking rock god. At Ryan underscore POD. Ryan, rock god, how are you?
I'm phenomenal. Kind of like the phenomenal one, AJ Styles.
Get out of here!
All right, Jeremy is on the call. I'm going to kick him from the call so he can't hear us when we start referencing.
Hey, you want to talk about contract extensions? Xavier Rhodes just signed a $70 million extension. So while we wait patiently and anxiously for a Matthew Stafford extension, Xavier Rhodes is one of the highest paid corners in football. He got $41 million in guarantees. You can buy a lot of purple stuff with $41 million.
That's true. That is very, very true. Coming up on the show, we also have Brett Whitfield. Whitfield? Am I being adequate here, Ryan?
Brett Whitfield.
Whitfield from Pro Football Focus will be joining us, and we're going to ask him just 30 minutes about why he personally hates the Detroit Lions. No, we're going to be going over the PFF outlook on the Lions season, but we are going to talk to him about just why I think PFF, like kind of the evolving thing from PFF. I certainly did have 3 years ago, I would not have thought about PFF as being like the stat to mention on Sunday Night Football.
No, so. I think there are so many other outlets that we could have prodded them for stats themselves. I mean, we still rely really heavily on Football Outsiders. I mean,
yeah.
Would you have been shocked if those two entities just kind of like switched bodies?
A little, because I think Football Outsiders kind of has, I mean, they have, of course, as they said, as you'll hear Whitefield say, we recorded already with him, but he'll talk about like the signature stats, which are obviously their own kind of advanced metrics. But then there's the grades. I think the grades is what kind of gives PFF kind of that leg up, really.
Oh, yeah, because they're so similar. Yeah, they're so similar to, I mean, everybody's played Madden before.
So yeah, I love DVOA. I kind of got into Football Outsiders because of the college angle, too, because I was really into, like, F-plus for all that stuff. But they are far more about, like, where teams sit. And DVOA is kind of, like, percentile and everything. So it doesn't really translate as well. Being able to hit the individual market, I think, is what PFF has given them their leg.
Stick around for that interview because it's really good. Brett is an official friend of the podcast now, but he also is able to sell you on why Chris Collinsworth is a man of the people. So stick around for that.
Yeah, and we're hoping to bring Brett back on later on in the year once Gunther Cunningham starts yelling at him in broken German. We hope that becomes a thing. We're really rooting for Brett there.
Hopefully we can get audio of that. That'd be great. That could be the new drop for Rage Corner.
Gunther Cunningham just switching between English and like a Bavarian German or something. Yeah, but that would rule. That would absolutely rule. But it is training camp today, Sunday, as we record. I think this is going to release a little later on Monday because I've got to tell you, I've a lot of shit's going on in my life, man. They've completely throttled my internet at this extended stay. I cannot wait to move in. But now I banged up my car too, trying to pick up someone. And it's just been, I love this city, but I've got to tell you, it's been pretty rough here for your boy.
Always going to get better though, Chris. Just
LA chews you up and spits you out.
I love it here though. I hit the food trucks up for the first time the other day, and that was amazing.
I'm really interested to see how this podcast is going to work with Jeremy just interjecting in the background, because I think that
it's getting annoying already.
No. That would be a great gimmick for us to just carry. That can be Jeremy.
I kind of want to do it permanently.
Jesus. I don't know how it's even picking up. I have to use his microphone here. I forgot mine at home. So if I sound different, that's why. It's Jeremy's little shitty microphone. Well, so
you might sound different because you stayed up pretty late watching the UFC fights.
I did too. Like, not to continue veering off the subject of football, but
training camp, guys. What's happening?
We're taking
the field in an hour, and you're talking about UFC.
Okay, but when they listen to it, it's do we not understand how time works? It isn't a live medium. This isn't a live medium.
I don't understand how time works, because whenever you guys talk about your West Coast time, that's willy nilly. Everything is measured in East Coast time.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm still trying to talk in it for you lesser brain. Yikes. I don't know what else to say about UFC, actually. You kind of prodded me onto that. Like, I don't know, Jones kicked Cormier's ass. That was great. I like how the Lions are going to kick the asses of every team they see.
Boom, woo! There it is. Here we go. Yeah. Training camp 2017. Football season is back, baby.
Look, we did our training camp preview last week. We're going to give you some more stuff this week. I'm not killing time here. I do want to kind of talk to Ryan about some bigger Lions questions. But if you want to go back, there is a podcast we did of our training camp preview, because we knew we wanted to give you that extra time to get ready, to get psyched up. And Jeremy, of course, is just demanding the extra training camp stuff because he is kind of losing his mind over there. But let's not meander any further. Let's talk about the Lions. I don't know, Ryan, like, I'm already seeing people starting to argue about the Super Bowl again. Our favorite free press writer has said it's crazy to think about the Lions and the Super Bowl, which, I mean, I guess, but, like, why is this? I mean, I'm not quite sure where this suddenly came from and why we do this every year, though. Like, we do this every year. Someone says Lions are going to the Super Bowl, and there is suddenly a knee-jerk need from writers and commentators to just take a massive shit on it. And it's like, yeah, the first guy it's a little crazy to think about too. And we've talked a lot about the idea of the Lions going to a Super Bowl and just how insane that is, and kind of how many pieces would have to fall into place to really do that. But I find the backlash to be even more fascinating. Like, there's just such a vehement need to just crush it without remorse. And I don't know, are you following what I'm saying there, or am I just kind of rambling to myself?
Less rambling, more so just placing the context in that Chris Sims was the one on Bleacher Report in an article that gave thought to this idea of the Lions could be a Super Bowl team. And like you said, all it takes is one person to light the match, right?
Right.
And it causes a lot of people to kind of revel and kind of rile themselves up into a stupor about whether or not this team is a Super Bowl contender or not. And I'm not going to say that Lions are a Super Bowl contender by any means, but we've seen kind of like the attrition of football, and we've seen how teams can kind of more or less come out of nowhere and position themselves at least to be playoff contenders. And we've talked vehemently. We've talked ad nauseum about how all it takes is just to get into the playoffs, and then crazy things happen. Like, I know you're a proponent of this, Chris.
I am, yeah, but at the same time too, like, I mean, I guess the example of that is the Falcons, right? They've had a couple of down years before this, but I don't know, they weren't completely, that particular roster wasn't completely alien to it, and I feel like there's less work they have had to do to get back there to get their roster in that position than what the Lions have to do. But I agree, man. I don't know how to read football, and like, I know I'm supposed to be the expert. I'm supposed to be smart, not dumb like Smart, and I want respect. It's my best Fredo. I can't really do it that well. I hope you were entertained by that.
As the dog father, I appreciate it.
I'm working with an unfamiliar mic here, so I'm trying to keep my voice down so I don't peek this thing out. But I'm not an obscurantist, but like it feels like talking about football, especially in this stage before a season even begins, just feels like pissing in the wind. Like, as you say, I don't know. I honestly don't know. This sport changes itself nearly overnight, it seems sometimes. Like, everything can just fall apart. Constant wins in this sport are so rare. Like, it's amazing to me that the Patriots have been as constant as they are. Because not even the Seahawks has been as constant as the Patriots are. Like there are so few teams that get to have year in and year out that guaranteed 10 plus wins. And I really don't know how to process it, because it changes every year in football. I'm not going to beat the platitudes like anyone can win in any given year, because obviously they can't. But trying to understand it before the ball is even snapped is just, frankly, in my mind, just boggling.
And doesn't it just kind of seem like a mindless exercise?
It is. We're just bored. We're just bored waiting for football to start. It's, for fuck's sake, it's a league that, you know, its season is shorter than the time spent in the offseason. Is there any other sport in North America that is like that? Because baseball certainly isn't like that.
There is no sport that has an offseason like the NFL.
Yeah.
There really isn't. I mean, just because of how long it is and the doldrums and I mean, you go through so many different phases of the NFL offseason that it becomes like this cycle, and you want to speed it up because it seems like the season every year goes by so fast. Like, it almost goes by in a blink of an eye. Like, I mean, at one point this season, we were talking about last season, but Caldwell was on the hot seat. Then we're singing Toto at the top of our lungs, and then we're in the absolute pits because Matthew Stafford's wearing a glove. Like, it seemed like that went by so quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, I was working on some of those games for radio, and I was just thinking to myself, it's like, I don't want football to go away. And it went away so quickly. Like, and suddenly we're back to once again sitting around talking about contract extensions and draft picks and all that stuff. And I've got to tell you, man, I love football. It's the only sport. If you could kill off every other sport tomorrow, and I would be fine, because football would still be on Saturdays and Sundays and Fridays if you cared about high school. But I mean, it just, I go, like, people, you can say what you want about me watching the CFL, man, but I don't know how y'all, I don't know, shut up. I don't know how y'all do it. Where you guys are more than content to wait till fucking September before you start watching football. I want football back on right now.
Yeah, I think
NFL isn't football.
Everybody wants football back right now. And I know I'm not the biggest college football fan, but the thing is, I am one of the biggest college football fans. Like the third week of
August. Yeah, exactly. When it's not on yet and ESPN is showing you the Chick-fil-A kickoff game of like South Carolina against like, I don't know, the Citadel. And then that first Saturday rolls around and it's 3 hours of ESPN College Game Day. And you're just sitting there watching Lee Corso just slip further and further into dementia before they throw a mascot head on him. And you're just like, that's fine. This is football.
This is what we've wanted for the past like 5 months. Yeah, no, I'm totally about college football in August. And then once the calendar hits September, then it's all about the Lions. And
I'll go through it. But again, like one day a year, it's that for me, it's like one day a week. That's why I pump up for Saturday too. But I mean, once you get rolling too, like, I mean, there's not many days where you don't have football if you seek it out, right?
Yeah, it's not hard to find football, right?
Yeah, I mean, you just have to be ready to watch, like, you know, a MAC game or a Tuesday night Sun Belt game between Georgia Southern and, like, Louisiana Lafayette or something. Or, of course, Thursday night football, which, I mean, your mileage may vary there.
But by contrast, In November, I will not have any interest in a lot of those games anymore. It's so weird. It's so weird how hungry we are for it, and then we just become oversaturated. We became so full of it that we just don't want any more than what is already on our plate.
You know what it's like? It's kind of like going to a Chinese buffet. Like, you will get so full up, you will think, I can't eat another bite. And then all that rice will clear out of your system and you will just be ready to go for round two. But by then, the buffet's closed. You cannot have another California roll.
I think we just solved. We just created the greatest metaphor for
We're not done yet. What is the line? If we're talking about a Chinese buffet, what is Lions football at the Chinese buffet? What is that?
Is it lo mein?
It might be lo mein.
Crab legs.
Crab legs?
What? Because it's gonna be awesome. But it's never as good as you want it to be.
And sometimes you leave with food poisoning. I can buy crab legs. That's okay.
I think I just want lo mein right now, which is why I said the Lions were lo mein.
Because
I want lo mein. I want Lions.
All right. Well, let's put that craving for lo mein aside. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be with Brett Whitefield from Pro Football Focus. And again, we had a great interview with him. You're going to love hearing it. And I know I've kind of tipped my hand already by speaking in the past tense, but that's why I'm adequate. Stick around. Brett Whitefield coming right up. We're back here again on the Pride of Detroit PODcast, and joining us now from Birmingham, Michigan, according to Uber Conference, Ryan Matthews, why don't you give the background? Why don't you introduce your friend here?
Sure, we can introduce him as Pro Football Focus's Brett Whitefield. How are you doing, man?
Doing great. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great on this side. Football's right around the corner. Football's right around the corner. We couldn't be doing any better, right, Chris?
Yeah, absolutely not. You know, my life is kind of all over the place, but I am absolutely thinking about football. You know, hey, smashed car, whatever. Sleepless nights, whatever. Trying to get into an apartment, that's whatever. But the Lions are back playing football, and I'm wearing my Matt Stafford jersey. So let's get into it. Let's get right into it. We have on Brett here from Pro Football Focus, and obviously we were going to have some questions for him a little later about Pro Football Focus itself, because I know a lot of fans tend to have very divided opinions on PFF. We're not going to ask him to completely defend his employer or none like that, but we will kind of talk over maybe some of the misconceptions about it, what PFF can and can't do, or whatever he can answer. I know he was talking to us before about being very secretive about a lot of this stuff, about PFF, the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing sometimes, but I think we're going to start on Lions and kind of their outlook for the year. Is that fair? Want to start there?
Definitely.
Okay. I guess, you know, as someone who has been very busy the last couple of months, I haven't really had a chance to really look at PFF like I usually do. What's PFF really seeing as kind of the outlook for the Lions, you know, especially after that 2015 season? Very interesting. Numbers really divided on whether or not that is really tenable to be doing what the Lions were doing, and what happens when normalcy kind of returns. Like, what does PFF see looking at the 2017 season for the Lions?
Oh man, I would love to say that it's super, you know, rainbows and butterflies. I don't think that's the case, unfortunately. You know, a few weeks back we released our roster rankings, top rosters 1 through 32, and I know the Lions were definitely way far down on that for the way fans want, you know, compared to where they wanted us to be. So I think the outlook really, I think it entirely hinges on Matt Stafford's play, you know, from at least a PFF perspective. I think if he can give them, you know, first 12 weeks of last season, like he, you know, start this season, I think the outlook gets a lot better from a PFF perspective. I know that with Decker going down, that really knocked, I think, the way we were feeling about it. The offensive line, you know, rankings would have been a huge boost for us, and then Decker going down kind of stalled that out. So I don't think it's looking good.
I mean, Ryan, you can jump in here. Like, that's all stuff we've kind of already known, though, right? We've talked about Taylor Decker and Moss and how that's going to, you know, impact, you know, where the Lions will be. And I think just, yeah, I mean, it's we kind of get leery about it, though, when talking about, you know, how many wins or where to put this team in power rankings.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of been the general dread around this offseason is the Taylor Decker injury. If you want to put all the off the field stuff with Calvin Johnson aside, right. If you want to tuck that away. But I think there is such a sense of optimism when the Lions went out and got arguably the best right tackle on the market and signed Rick Wagner. When they went out and got TJ Lang, that felt like the cherry on top of the sundae. And then it felt like all of the ice cream got scooped out from underneath you when Taylor Decker got hurt. So I guess with how Brett said, the optimism relies heavily on Matthew Stafford and how well he can perform. Brett, where do you think that, aside from the offensive line, where do you think the Lions need to improve the most in terms of like a position? Like, is it the wide receivers that need to step up? There's much been made about, you know, wide receiver drops, especially last season. Is it the running backs? Is it the health of Amir Abdullah? Is it some more consistent running out of Theo Riddick? Like, where do you think the Lions need, where do you think Matthew Stafford needs the most help out of the rest of the guys on his offense?
On the offensive side of the ball, I would have to say the running game. I think Abdullah staying healthy for the full year is going to be the biggest win for the offense. If that can happen, I think good things will come about. In limited sample, you know, of Abdullah's play, he's graded really well for PFF, and he's put up some really good signature stats as far as, you know, elusive rating and things like that. So I think that's the big focal point that needs to improve.
I'm not trying to get already into the disrespect or whatever, but
yeah,
I know in the past things like there were no players there were no players in the Pro Football Focus top 50. And I'm sure there's some Lions fans who'd wonder why Stafford isn't on there. And then I'm seeing here, is it fifth worst? No, that's just full on roster. I was looking, I think worst offensive line. I'm seeing from the Free Press, worst offensive line. In the NFC North.
I think the Packers definitely have a better offensive line. I think the Bears do. So I think really to argue that point, it would be against Minnesota.
Mm-hmm. And with Minnesota, it was really just health last year, right, Brett? And they also added, you know, Riley Reiff and,
although Riley Reiff is down now, so
that's tough.
Yeah, I think when we did our rankings, we didn't know that.
One
big thing was the health, but I do think, you know, they also signed Remmers, who, mm-hmm. you know, he hasn't been fantastic by any means. I'm actually looking up the rankings right now because I would be shocked that we had the Vikings ahead. We did. Yeah, they had just terrible tackle play last year. So I think we're obviously banking on, you know, Reef and Remmers really improving that offensive line for them. So they also signed JC Treader, I believe, right? Or no, that was
the Browns. Yeah. My second favorite team, my AFC team, the Browns, did an incredible job of improving their offensive line this offseason. But to stick with Lions talk, can we flip to the other side of the ball? Because you mentioned the front seven for the Lions. And this was where it seemed like Bob Quinn put the most work. If you want to set the offensive line aside for a second, this is where he seemed to put the most work in terms of going out and getting a lot of free agent depth, going out into the draft and using a lot of his draft capital on improving that front seven. I know you've been doing a little work for PFF in terms of college, but how much faith do you really have in Jared Davis kind of being like the captain of this defense, and how much do you think that he'll help improve that really poor linebacker play from last year?
Well, ironically, in my time at PFF, Florida is one of the teams that I work on every single week, regardless of our scheduling. So I've seen every game Davis has played, and I've been able to work that game. So I actually have a lot of faith. I think it's probably even true internally, but that we have a higher opinion of Jared Davis than even his grade suggests. I think that athleticism speaks for itself. We had that crazy stat where he didn't give up one single reception over 20 yards on, like, I don't know, some like 89 passes into his coverage that were 20 yards or more. He didn't give up one of those catches.
So
that alone would be a huge improvement.
I was going to say,
Whitehead gave up almost 10 of those himself last year.
Yeah, and I mean that just really speaks to improving the athleticism there at that part, at that part of the defense or at that level too, because it seemed like Tyre Whitehead was really miscast in that role this past season.
Absolutely.
Well, I want to also since you're talking on Florida, why don't we just talk about Tease Tabor from there too? And I think it's a question among Lions fans on when he will see the field. Cornerbacks tend to take a little time to mature to get into the NFL. But I mean, like, it was a very divisive pick where the Lions made in the second round to take Tease right. Tabor. I'm just kind of curious in the PFF opinion of him from you, since you're watching them Gators.
Yeah. So I love Tease. PFF loved Tease until the combine debacle. He was a top 15 player on our board. I still loved the pick. I think you have teams out there, you know, like the Giants and the Broncos and the Cardinals that have shown, they've given you the model to have, you know, what it takes to have a great defense, and having three cornerbacks that can play is the model. That's what they've shown. Whether, you know, Giants in one season signed two big free agents and Jenkins and Rodgers Cromartie, and they went out and spent the first round draft pick on a corner. That was one off season. So they're showing you right there. It takes three corners to get it done. And I think, you know, even with as good as Lawson has played, I think adding Tabor to the mix is huge for the team. Yeah, I think in an ideal world, Tabor could step in at some point this season, and, you know, Lawson could maybe move into the slot where he started as a Lion. So I think that would be super good for the team. And it would, you know, that was our worst position last year. I know linebacker always gets talked about as the weakness, but slot corner last year was where we just got absolutely murdered. So.
Yeah, and I mean, like, I'm kind of fascinated with that, because I haven't really thought much about Lawson, really. I kind of thought, you know, he'd eventually be replaced once T's kind of matured in there. But I think you're right. If he can be moved to the slot, suddenly the Lions secondary, probably, you know, between Slay, Lawson, and Tabor, could potentially, fans could get really excited about.
Yeah, absolutely. Tabor is, like, pretty perfect for their system, too. You know, last year they played a very strong combo of cover one and cover three. I think 23% of snaps in both cover one and cover three. And that's pretty much exactly what Tabor did at Florida. So a lot of cover one, a lot of cover three. So I think he fits the system perfectly.
So let's jump up to that front line that seems to be much maligned. I mentioned earlier how Bob Quinn spent a lot of his resources in the offseason, went out and even signed depth guys like Jordan Hill from Seattle. He went and got Cornelius Washington from the Bears. He got Akeem Spence from Tampa Bay. There was a lot of, I mean, he even went out and got Ego Ferguson from the Bears. So it seems like there's just a lot of churning over depth there at the defensive line position. And now with Ezekiel Ansah going on the PUP, we're really not sure about how serious this injury could be, stemming back from maybe that high ankle sprain that he had a year ago that kind of plagued his entire season. But do you see this defensive line being improved? Because we saw in 2014 how important it is to have a front four, and how the rest of your defense just kind of benefits from being able to put pressure on the quarterback. So do you see any kind of market improvement from kind of the depth signings that they've made, or any of their draft picks, or maybe even just a return to health?
Yeah. So some of these signings you're talking about, notably the Spence and the Hill, to me, those aren't even really necessarily depth signings. They're kind of like, let's throw spaghetti against the wall and see if it sticks. I mean, these are guys that had a lot of promise coming out of college, you know, pretty high draft picks, I believe. I know Hill was, I'm not quite sure on Spence. And they've both just been, you know, pretty much terrible in their time in the NFL so far. So I think Quinn's just, it's actually very similar to what the Patriots do. They take guys that had that pedigree coming out, and he kicks the tires a little bit and he gets guys to work. So I think Quinn's trying to take a page out of that book. And if one of those guys plays well, that will be huge for us. You know, the D line last year, I think was the second biggest weakness on the team, next to that slot corner spot. You know, they were 29th in pressure rate at 30% of dropback. They were 25th in time to pass, for the amount of time a quarterback actually has in the pocket before he's forced to throw. and they were 28th in third down pressures. So even on, you know, the critical downs, typically, you know, it's a pass. They still couldn't get it done. So I think that is an area that they will have to improve to be good. Washington, I think, is the gem of that class that you talked about, these guys he's bringing in. He's kind of I did a series for PFF not too long ago, a couple months now, called Third Down Assassin. And Washington didn't make the cut because he had limited snaps, but he was right up there with the top guys. On third down last year, his pass rush productivity was like 12.0, which ranked seventh. The big difference of what he was asked to do in Chicago compared to what he'll be asked to do here, in Chicago, he was more of an interior guy in that 3-4 defense. You know, in their base package, he was playing 3-4 end, you know, the 5 technique, the 4 technique. In Detroit, I'm hearing he's probably going to play closed edge, you know, on the close side there. I'd love to see him playing some 3 technique, though, on passing downs.
Sure. And yeah, I think that speaks to some of what Bob Quinn, like you said, going out and maybe getting these players who were maybe miscast in other places. You know, when Akeem Spence was signed, he came in and said, I think they had me doing some things that I wasn't necessarily comfortable at or I necessarily excelled at in Tampa Bay. You know, they wanted me to do some stuff that I wasn't, you know, very, I guess, for lack of a better way of saying it, very good at. Or, you know, Cornelius Washington was a big case that, you know, he seems more prototypical for a 4-3 defense than he did when, you know, Fangio came over and John Fox got hired and they went to the 3-4 system. So
definitely.
Yeah. Do you think that's going to be really enough to, I guess, the ultimate goal is to provide some more pressure? Do you think that's going to end up coming about or no? Do you see them being improved?
If they get a little bit out of those guys, I definitely think the unit's improved. You talked about being the miscast, you know, Spence in Tampa Bay, they had a great 3-tech in Gerald McCoy.
Mm-hmm.
Spence was kind of asked to anchor that 4-3 defense at the nose position. And I do think if you look at his skill set, what he's good at, I think he probably was best fit to play in McCoy's spot. But you know they weren't moving McCoy. I think that's definitely true for him. Same with Jordan Hill. You know, he's more of a, you know, a penetrating 3 technique. In Seattle, they don't run a 3-4 per se, but he was asked to 2-gap a little bit when he was there. And that's definitely a miscast for him. So I think both of those guys, I think you're hoping that one of them, at least one of them, can step up and give you some pressure from the 3 technique spot. And if that does happen, it also allows them to keep Robinson, you know, more of the traditional nose. And I know that's not what they're doing. I've seen in you know, OTAs, he's still playing more of the 3 technique spot, which is out of position for him. So, yeah, so I think, you know, adding those guys to the mix, adding Washington to kind of play on the edge, that's definitely more bodies in the head last year that are probably capable. And then I think Hyder is the big wild card. He was a favorite of mine last year. He was a third down assassin as well. His PRP went from 10.5 overall on just normal passing downs to 13.3 on third downs, which is like, I think 10th in the NFL among edge players. So,
and is that, is PRP, that's pass rushing productivity?
Yep.
Okay.
And he could take a big step forward as well. You know, that was his first year really playing the edge. He'd been an interior guy most of his career so far. So I think he could even take a big step forward, and that would be a huge win for that defense.
All right, we are going to take a quick break here. When we come back, we're going to keep talking with Brett from Pro Football Focus. We're going to dive in more on kind of the nuts and bolts of how PFF can. He can't answer everything for us. Obviously, this is kind of a big deal now, but we want to like kind of talk to him about kind of PFF's evolving place in the NFL world, and maybe we can figure out why many Lions fans are mad at PFF for low grades for the Lions. And I mean, granted, might be because of us because we publish those articles. So we'll find out. Stick around. Rolling right along here on the Pride of Detroit podcast, PODcast at Pride of Detroit on Twitter. Find us on iTunes and Stitcher. Brett, shit, I don't have your last name up here in front of me again. Brett, okay, let me try this.
So fucking adequate.
Fucking adequate as hell. Brett Whitefield here with us from ProFootballFocus.com. And before we dive into some of our bigger questions we have about PFF and its evolving role in the NFL media landscape, we did want to have a note. We did talk about this during the break about Greg Robinson, Cyrus Kwanjo. I know podcast isn't the best place for breaking news, but I know we were just sitting here. Jeremy Reisman, the fearless leader, is behind us working on the site as we are running this podcast. And Greg Robinson, he was taken off the NFI, but I believe you had some interesting notes about him because in relation to another Lions player, Cyrus Kwanjo. So what do you have for us?
Yeah, so I think when the Lions made the move to grab Robinson, I think it was kind of put out there by the team, and now fans are expecting it that Robinson's just going to be the automatic starter there. And that mm-hmm. could very well be true, but I know from a PFF point of view, we like Cyrus a lot better. He's played, you know, light years ahead of where Robinson's been so far. Robinson was one of the worst tackles in the league since he was drafted by the Rams, and Cyrus has played very well the last 2 years. He's outperformed him in both PFF grade and some of our signature stats, like, you know, pass blocking efficiency and run blocking grade and stuff like that. So I think I wouldn't be shocked if that's more of a battle, I guess, is what I'm trying to say, than you know, the team has kind of let on. I think Cyrus is still in it.
So a couple of quick things about that, Brett. Because Buffalo has such a good unit when it comes to the offensive line, like, I mean, as a unit, they're mm-hmm. one of the best, like, run blocking teams in the entire NFL. When it comes to PFF, like, does Cyrus benefit from being alongside those guys, or are the grades, like, more individual?
So, yeah, the grades are definitely, you can put them in a vacuum, you know, it's every player, every play, you know, just his responsibility and his performance. But I'm not going to sit here and deny that playing on a good offensive line doesn't help, even just from a mental standpoint.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Know, if you're only having to worry about your guy and that's it, I think that can definitely help. So I'm not going to pretend like that's not a factor.
But yeah. Sure.
And that's a very good point.
So. And it really just comes, both these guys come from different sides of the track, too, is what I was kind of getting at. Greg Robinson, their offensive line in St. Louis, now Los Angeles, pretty lacking for his time there. And it seems like Buffalo's kind of just ahead of the point. But it comes back to the point that you made last segment, talking about, you know, Bob Quinn going out and kicking the tires, so to speak, going out and getting Greg Robinson, who was a former second overall pick, getting Cyrus Kwanjo, who is, a second round pick out of Alabama. Mm-hmm. So these are guys who he could definitely take a flyer on, right? And maybe they end up living up to their build potential.
Yep. And that's why I didn't, even though Robinson's graded so poorly for us, so I actually didn't kill the Lions on the move. It was like, why not? I mean, you're taking, everyone's going to take their shot at some point. So why not take a swing on Robinson? If you can fix him, then you look like, you know, a genius, because you got this guy with an amazing pedigree and someone that's supposed to be really good. So
yeah, you got the open box special and the thing turns out to be one of the best of the line. Yeah. Or something. I don't know. Yeah. Okay. I want to move on and talk about Pro Football Focus itself. And like, I think we can just start by saying, like, I don't know how long you've been with PFF, but it's obviously become a very different entity within the last couple of years. Like, Chris Collinsworth bought the team, and all of a sudden, like, I mean, Chris, not the team, but the organization, and all of a sudden, like, Pro Football Focus, it's not just like stuff we talk about in the blog sphere, and every now and then, you know, it makes its way into a newspaper or something. It's now like something that's on Sunday Night Football broadcasts, and it's on Monday mm-hmm. Night Football, and it's suddenly in your face in a way. Like, the last time I saw a stat really kind of like get pushed like this was QBR, when ESPN kind of came up with the QBR formula and they were really pushing through it. And I know there were some problems with that formula to start, but I mean, like, you compare it to, say, Football Outsiders, or I'm trying to think who else kind of does that. Football Outsiders is kind of the main one who does that, be it like the DVOA or what Brian Freeman and Bill Connolly. Bill Connolly from SB Nation, I should add, like, they were doing F plus numbers for college, but those obviously, like, no one brings those up in those broadcasts. But like, what's it like? Like, how much of this evolution have you really seen at Pro Football Focus in that regard?
Oh, just a ton. So when I got hired at PFF, you know, I kind of came in with the mindset of, I'm just going to be an analyst. I'm just going to provide a bunch of data, work on these games. The teams will use it. It'll be hunky dory. I never imagined that we would be the kind of content provider that we are now. I know that's been one of Chris's big focuses is he wants to get us out to fans, out in front of fans a lot more. And a lot of that has to do with, we've brought back the subscription-based model that we used to have that the fans loved. So that's back now. And then also, I don't know if you guys have noticed, but we actually have writers now writing about all 32 NFL teams on a daily basis. There's daily content for almost every team, depending on the news cycle, of course. And so that's really how I broke into writing. I wasn't like a writer at all for PFF. This opportunity came up. They said, hey, we noticed you're from Detroit. Would you be interested in covering the Lions on a daily basis? And I said, well, sure. So that's how I even got into writing. I never anticipated being a writer for PFF. So I was more of the behind the scenes guy. And now, I think something crazy since like March, I've had over 100, short articles published covering various NFL teams. So,
damn. That kind of brings me to my next question, just as far as like workload, like, because I mean, this is obviously, it's not like an advanced stat, like all those other things I mentioned, DVOA, F plus, mm-hmm. S&P plus, those are all like statistics based. And I think there's some adjustment for like historical basis in the case of a couple of those. But in your case, this is like making a number out of something that is generally subjective. And I think that's where a lot of people kind of critique Pro Football Focus in the subjective, and they're kind of wondering, it's like, I don't know if this guy has, this kind of scouting background, but I as much as you can, I know you can't talk too deeply into the process, but what's it like kind of working on, a Sunday trying to get those numbers produced? Like how many people is that going through? What's that kind of margin of error? Yeah.
So to backtrack just a couple sentences ago, the signature stats that we put out, there's nothing subjective about any of that. So that's all, some type of statistical formula, whether it's pass blocking efficiency or pass rush productivity or wide receiver rating, stuff like that. Every one of those is based in, it's a statistical foundation. There's no subjectivity there. So the grades, that's, I guess, where you could get into saying maybe it's subjective, but so to answer your baseline question, that every Sunday we have a team of, I don't even know what the count is up to. We add processes every year, but I know just for the baseline data that we collect, player participation, the grade, pass rush productivity, stuff like that. There's that baseline data. I know you're talking, at least 12 people working on the game at some point.
So 12 that, people.
Yeah, 12, and that's just for the baseline info. We have, review processes that take place that will add more people to the mix. You've got all the all 22 footage, that will get reworked on again, whether it's, doing route analysis for the wide receivers or blocking analysis for the offensive linemen, stuff like that. So by the time a game is done, you're talking mid-teens of the amount of people that have looked at one game.
And you mentioned earlier when we were talking about, Kwanjo and Robinson and, the Bills and the Rams, like kind of the struggle, like of like, when a unit as a whole is kind of like not doing so well, it kind of changes the makeup for everything. Like, is that kind of a struggle for you guys to kind of like separate something when there's like, if there's like a bad offensive line or like a pass heavy offensive scheme, does that kind of like change how do you have to adjust that when you're looking at, say, like a quarterback?
Well, I think that's why it's important to realize that all of our stats and grades they're on a per snap basis.
Mm-hmm.
So they're all weighted accordingly. The grades are weighted according to how many snaps, a player played. So if it's a pass-heavy offense, that's getting factored right into the grade, the baseline of the grade. So everything's pretty adjusted for that stuff. As far as going back to the Buffalo thing with the offensive line, a really good example of kind of the consistency that we had. I don't know if you're familiar with Paul Alexander,
mm-hmm.
the Cincinnati Bengals offensive line coach. So there's a video actually out there of us sitting down with him, and we go through his entire offensive line and how he graded every player on every snap. And he, after watching every single play that we graded, he disagreed with us one time. And I think that that's a pretty good testament of how, you know, consistent and accurate our grades are and how we're producing the data.
It, it sounds like quite the secret society. I'm scared to ask questions about PFF.
I mean, hey man, it is secretive. I don't even, you know, I'm still new still. I've been here for a few years now. And, it, you know, I'm nobody. I don't know anything. So.
Yeah, I find that fascinating.
Yeah, in other words, yeah. There's levels to this stuff, right, Brett?
Yeah, absolutely.
You don't have the operating feet and level yet to be on like Gunther Cunningham's level or something.
Right. Like I have no idea what he does. I know that we're really excited he's here. And you know, I know he's definitely, I think, taking on a quality control type of role, but I don't know what that looks like on a day-to-day level. I'm sure at some point we'll kind of fill the fans in more on what that looks like, but
it's just fascinating to me because as you said, it kind of moves so quickly. PFF just kind of really changed how we think about it. And I think, I mean, what would you say to Lions fans though, who have kind of convinced themselves that, I mean, I mentioned it earlier, there's not a single Lions player on the top 50, which depending how you feel about Matt Stafford, that depends where, you know, that'll go. But I don't think, like, I'm trying to be as unbiased as possible. I don't think anyone else would even be near sniffing that top 50 in the NFL. Cause like, I think for NFL fans, you do kind of get a little blinkered to your team. You get, you know, boxed in just thinking about your team. You think a little higher of the guys you have and not as much looking at the others and being like, oh, okay, I'm starting to do the arithmetic in my head. But like, what would you say to a Lions fan who is kind of like convinced that it's just no matter what happens, the numbers are just going, the grades are going to be tilted away from the Lions because they're the Lions or whatever their record or the stigma of the team or what, or PFF has a bias against them or whatever they come up with. Like what's kind of your, like, what's your words to someone who would say that?
I think from a way that we're viewed in the media, a lot of, you know, what fans think is based on like those pieces, like you just talked about the PFF 50.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you go look at that, look at the quarterbacks that we put in there. I don't have the list right in front of me, but you know, I don't think an honest fan is going to sit back and go, you know what, Stafford is better than some of those guys. And they might. There might be a guy or two. We could certainly have that debate. But
I've seen some fans call him a top five quarterback. So I mean,
and even still, even if he is he's the fifth best quarterback, you're still having to debate that to get him in a top 50 list.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So.
Yeah,
I think just I would encourage fans to be objective. I know I work for PFF. I've been born and raised. Well, I'm actually a Patriots fan first, but we don't have to get into that. But I was born here. And
listen, we all spent some time in the desert. Totally understand.
Right. Well, yeah.
Definitely. The prodigal son returns.
I have a good excuse though. I have family from Boston. So.
I mean, yeah. There you go.
Yeah, but anyway. So, born and raised here, I've followed the Lions my whole life. I can assure you there's no bias against the Lions. I would say this, when the Lions, you know, put together a team that is, you know, a pretty good team, I think you'll see the grades come around. You know, last year, I don't think anyone would deny that that team won as many games as they did because of Matthew Stafford and Matthew Stafford alone. I don't think anyone is looking at that overall performance going, holy crap, what an amazing team. We need five guys on the top 100. You know, are there fans out there like that? I'm sure there are, but
yeah, I think some people like kind of overvalue Darius Slay and maybe Matt Prater, but I can't really think of too many other guys you'd come out here and thump your chest for.
Slay pounded the table for Slay for a while. He had a down year last year compared to his 2015 season. I think if he put together back-to-back 2015 seasons, he probably is a guy that could have possibly cracked the top 50, but he didn't. He kind of regressed a little bit. So,
well, I think a lot of the ill will that Lions fans harbor towards PFF, though, kind of stems from Ezekiel Ansah getting snubbed on that PFF when you guys did top 101 players when he didn't make the list after he put up the season he did in 2015.
Right. Yeah, so, I remember that being some interesting convos on Twitter about that.
Yeah. So I think a lot of it kind of stems from that. That was the first one that seemed like an eye opener. And then once you even open up a little crack in the levee, like, and no pun intended, but like, you're going to just see the floodgates open wide up. So when Stafford has a season like he did last year and he doesn't make the top 50 list, people are going to get upset.
Yeah. I think one thing you'll see, most of the guys that made that list, they have either played at a super high level for multiple seasons in a row, or they played at such a high level last year that we were forced to put them on there. One thing you never see is you never see who almost made the list but didn't, you know? So the year with Ansa, you know, I know for a fact that he was close to cracking the top 100, but he didn't. And I know this past year, Slay, I think, I don't have the right number, and it's not even an official thing, but I think he came in around, like, you know, the 110 range. So he was really close to cracking the top 100.
Brett, thank you so much. Where can people find you at?
At Brett Whitefield. My Twitter handle's changing on August 7th, so stay tuned for that.
Oh, yeah, because you got to get the PFF in there, don't you?
I do. I'm just waiting till my official, my official start date with the season, which is, I think for us, is August 7th. So when I report for camp, my Twitter handle will change.
Okay, well, I'm following you right now just to make sure I don't lose that in the mix there now. So I would encourage everyone else to do the same. Follow early and follow often. Twitter is still my favorite place to be on the internet.
And the other thing too, Brett, you're going to be at training camp this year, right?
Oh, yes. Good question. I'll be there right now. I'm thinking 7 of the 8 open practices. So cool. If you want to chat, we can chat all things PFF. Come find me. Hit me up on Twitter. I'm sure I'll be hanging with you guys when I can or where you can, and we'll figure it out.
Absolutely. Brett Whitefield, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, guys.
Come right back. We're going to try to wrap up the show, and we don't have much of a mailbag. We're going to talk a little couple things, and I think that this is just going to be kind of me and Ryan shooting the shit because the dogs are not here. The dogs are out to play without the shepherd.
Wrong. I'm here.
You can hear me. I think we're just going to open with that little clink there as Ryan has gotten into the, okay, you don't have any whiskey there. What are you drinking now, Ryan?
Little Canada Dry garnished by some Tito's.
Okay.
Because football's back, baby.
Kind of the watered down Moscow Mule. Well, in case you haven't been aware that we did not play the mailbag theme, that's because we don't really have. We've got a couple of questions here. I might read them, but I was very busy. I did not have time to do a mailbag. I fucked up. So,
well, I mean, some would say busy, others would say adequate. 6 of one, half a dozen of another.
Adequate busy. I can't really merge them well together right now. I'm not as drunk. I wish I could be drinking right now, but I'm not.
We have reviews.
We do have reviews, and as promised, we will keep going through them, even though there is no mailbag. These reviews, 2 a week, stay each. Just even we could do 2 a week max. But each time you send us in a review, and we have to read one on the podcast, it means that we stave off 20 seconds of wrestling talk, which is apparently the worst thing in the world, according to Jeremy Reisman, even though we have taken far weirder, demented turns before. And we're about to take another one because something else is happening tonight, Sunday, and we're going to talk about that. But by all means, Ryan, I've seen one of these reviews, and Jeremy told me I cannot look at this other one. So let's start. And since he is tagged to his keyboard, why don't you start reading them?
Absolutely. So we have a review from The Unknown 21. The title of the review is "Keep Up the Good Language." Love the podcast. Does updating this review each week count as a new review to keep the wrestling talk out of the podcast?
Yes.
I didn't know you could do that, to be honest.
It was a 5-star review from The Unknown 21. Did we not read this one last week? I feel like we read this one last week.
No, because what he's referencing on the good language thing is we had someone who was very mad at us for blaspheming and cursing.
That's a very good point. And we'll get to that later in the mailbag, too. So our second review is from The Big Easy. It's titled "No Wrestling Talk," which saddens me, but he picks my spirits up by rating us 5 stars. Was going to rate 1 star because they wouldn't show the Vanilla Frosty any love, which is not true. I was the one who was showing Vanilla Frosty love.
Yeah, that's not true at all. I'm the hater in the room. I'm the one who hates the Vanilla Frosty.
Let the record show that Chris Lemieux has proved himself very adequate by hating on the Vanilla Frosty, and that Ryan_POD loves the Vanilla Frosty.
Rock God.
Rock God loves the Vanilla Frosty. His review continues, but seriously, great podcast with guys that view football from different perspectives. Give you something to think about. I look forward to listening to the podcast every week, and we look forward to giving it to you every week, the Big Easy. So thank you.
Okay, why? I'm going to reach over to Jeremy here. Why was I not allowed to look at that one?
No, you're not allowed to look at the next one for next week.
Well, rules are out the window. I mean, we could just read it right here and just wave off, put the waiver on next week. What do you say, Ryan? We got time.
I wish I had the DJ air horns right now because I'd play them. But our third review from JUTGHJJMN, which is a bunch of gobbledygook. It's a bunch of gobbledygook, so I don't understand it. But poor knowledge from host is the title of the review.
Well, hold up before we get into this. One, how many stars?
2 stars.
Oh, fuck off.
So this is an actual review. The other contributors are great and educated. Well, thank you. A bunch of consonants. However, the host is consistently uninformed and seems to not know much about football.
People seem to say, is that it? Is that all there was?
That is it. Yep. From the collection of.
Okay. Can I ask then, like, what are people expecting me to know about football? Like, honestly, I'm not trying to just get in here and be mad, baboon ass red mad. But like, what do people expect me to know about football at this? Is it because I don't have the depth charts right?
Is it because you don't know how to say the players' names correctly?
I mean, it might be that. I know I've screwed up every now and then, I don't know what to say, man. Like, I like watching the games. I'm smart about the games. I'm not smart about sitting here in the off season reading fucking spreadsheets like some of you guys do.
It's a different
skill set.
Is it because Jeremy Langford might not make the Bears roster, but you had him as a top 10 running back last year?
I mean, if that's the case, I will gladly own that forever. But I see this a lot now, and I'm starting to get a little kind of miffed on it. It's kind of like, oh, okay, I get it. I'm not. What do you want? What do you want from me? Like, everyone says I'm not smart, but they won't say why. They won't tell me what I'm doing wrong. And it's kind of like, okay, great. Just the battle of the nerds here telling me that I do not have the depth of the lore of the realm or something.
Chris, this is what
I can explain a single wing offense to you, motherfuckers. Okay. Don't try me.
Chris, in the realm of teaching, what we call these reviews that call you out, we call these reviews feedback that doesn't include anything constructive. There's nothing that is actionable. There's nothing that provides you with anything that you can improve on. But this is the reason why. Let me explain to you, Chris, why people want to tell you that you're bad at talking about football, but they don't want to provide you with any feedback in which you could improve on. And that is because they would never want you to be anything more than adequate, because that's what you are. And they want you to stay that way forever.
You want me to stay that way forever.
But okay, I want my puppy to stay a puppy forever. Look, I mean, some things we have control over, okay? I do not have control over biological processes, but I can keep you adequate for as long as I want. And
I mean, I was writing I was writing opinion columns for a long time too, and it's just kind of like, okay, I don't know.
Chris, off-season's not my strong suit.
Yeah, I do run the podcast. I do run this damn show.
For anybody who wants to call out our host inadequacies when it comes to football knowledge, that's fine. Chris, don't be miffed by that. Don't be miffed by that.
Give me some feedback.
You're perfect the way you are.
Okay, fine, whatever. This has been a lot of fucking navel gazing now.
This was a rage corner that turned into a peace corner. Thanks to Ryan.
I don't know if that's good for the podcast, him just yelling in the background. I really don't, but
I can hear it. It sounds great.
It sounds phenomenal, like the phenomenal one, AJ Styles. Can we get into any mailbag questions?
Yeah, I'm not going to play the mailbag theme, but we're going to talk about it because there is a specific theme to this mailbag and a specific theme to what we're going to close out the podcast talking about, because we have certain ticks on this podcast. We love certain things. And one of those things is returning tonight, Sunday. So by the time you hear it, maybe you've watched it, or maybe you haven't. Maybe you're going to have to go scramble for it. But Rick and Morty is back. The long-awaited season.
Can we count you not playing the mailbag theme as kind of like a punishment? We need more questions. You need to send questions.
That's on us. We didn't really put out any calls for
Chris,
mail.
But this is why people walk all over you in the reviews. You need to be harder on our listeners.
All right, fine. All right, you motherfuckers, get your ass in line.
Get your goddamn shit together.
Now I'm just sounding like I'm like an Aaron Sorkin character. I just swear too much. I don't want to
get all up.
All right. Well, first off, before we get into the Rick and Morty, we have one question here from the main man. How many goddamn times can you use the word goddamn in one goddamn podcast? I bet it's a goddamn shitload of goddamn times. Well, hashtag ask POD. And I have to say that, well, goddamn.
I said goddamn even before you asked the question. So, you know,
like,
this is
like a blasphemous foghorn leghorn now. Well, goddamn, I say goddamn. Goddamn.
If you wanted to change your Twitter identity, Chris, you could definitely go to goddamn foghorn leghorn.
Godhorn damn horn. I'm not sure getting professional. Anyway, the other two questions we have are basically Rick and Morty based. So this is kind of the Rick and Morty finale. So maybe I'll drop in the theme here. Josh LaFon wants us to ask us, which characters that are currently in Rick and Morty or have been at some point do you think you guys would be in the show?
I would be Squanch.
You would be Squanch?
Yeah, because I Squanch all of our listeners.
Ew.
Jesus. I can't even answer that question now after hearing that out of you. I really can't.
I feel like Chris's spirit animal would be Scary Terry.
I was gonna say either that or bird person.
I think that those are the two best ones to describe yourself, Chris, because at one the reason I say Scary Terry is because you have a propensity to say the word bitch a lot.
I do.
Whenever you tell someone to retire, you
oh yeah. Well, that's not me. That's because of
Danny DeVito, right?
Danny DeVito, right? Who famously told Antonin Scalia, "Retire, bitch," and Twitter dug it up after Antonin Scalia fucking kicked the bucket.
Well, and you know what? You carry on that legacy. So part of you is Scary Terry, but I think that I think you as bird person makes a lot of sense.
All right, what do you think Jeremy is? You don't get to answer this. You're not part of this podcast. I saw you.
Mr. Meeseeks, look at me.
That is the right answer.
Hold on. Jeremy is the stickler Meeseeks.
Okay. All right. And then the
short game.
All right. N.E. Shaw asks us, are you guys totally jealous that the Bleacher Report app is presented by Rick and Morty? Yeah. What? Why does Bleacher Report get to do this and not SB Nation?
Hold on. I had not heard of this, and why is this just now being...
Okay, I think I get this, because Bleacher Report got bought by Turner Media. Turner Media runs Cartoon Network, as well as TNT.
Why can't we ever have nice things, Chris?
How are you feeling about Rick and Morty? Are you ready?
Chris, I am so ready for Rick and Morty. This is the thing, though, is when they put a date on it, I was like, well, now it feels like it's forever away, and it's never gonna be here. But now, it's here, and...
Much like football. Football's almost here, too.
Football is Rick and Morty. Football is a Chinese buffet.
Football, so... football, the idea of football itself is the Szechuan sauce. Mulan Szechuan sauce.
Chris, we gotta get out of here on that.
Yeah, we got to. They're teasing, like, jugs of that stuff to give away. We gotta go and try to yank one. Shanghai one, as they will.
Sign the contract, Matthew Stafford.
Bye, everyone. We'll see you next time.